This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Over the years, Charlotte has faced challenges with its air quality, but like in other cities, what we knew of that air quality came from a blanket reading covering pretty much the whole city. Now a new technology is emerging that allows for hyper-local examination of air quality. Ultimately, it's hoped that this will allow urban planners to know exactly where damaging air particles originate, how they move through the air, and exactly where the highest concentration of those particles is at any given time. Further, they hope that one day this information will be as accessible to all of us as the weather. Given what we know about the weather, I'm not sure I want that to happen. The new technology is being rolled out in various cities across the country, including Charlotte, and is the work of a public-private partnership involving the Environmental Protection Agency, a private company called Aclima, and Google Earth. And we have a representative of two of those three organizations with us to tell us more about what they're doing on the West Coast, and somebody here in our city who's doing something very similar in cooperation with the EPA on this coast. First, Dr. Melissa London is chief scientist for Aclima. They are based out of San Francisco, but she has joined us in our Spirit Square studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
I have to ask you, I've never heard of Aclima. What is it?
Aclima is a company that's designing and deploying large-scale sensor networks, basically to provide what we call environmental intelligence for the planet, for people. Just allow us to have the information that makes we can make intelligence decisions, as you were saying, about our city, about what we're emitting, about where. And so we're really excited about the promise of the small-scale sensors in a package that can be deployed in hundreds or thousands of places.
And are you measuring, is Aclima measuring pretty much only air quality, or do you do water quality? Do you do other kinds of measurements as well?
At the point we're focused on air quality, but we certainly see a lot of promise in many environmental applications.
And you work, I would imagine, primarily with what, municipalities, government organizations, not with private companies?
We work with all different aspects. We certainly have the CRADA, our research and development partnership with EPA, but we are in contact. We talk with a number of regulatory and cities. We've been California and other parts of the United States, and we've also talked with different private entities who are interested in sort of understanding air quality, both indoor and outdoor.
Okay. Well, Dr. Melissa London is here from Aclima. We'll explore what they're doing out in California, what they've done in Denver, and also their cooperative effort with the EPA. And we have Dan Costa with us. He is the National Program Director for the Air Climate Energy Research Program at the Environmental Protection Agency. And he joins us by phone this morning from Research Triangle Park. Good morning, Mr. Costa. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Mike. It's nice to be here.
And also in our studio is Terry Lanzel. He's Program Director for Clean Air Carolinas and Manager of the Air Keepers Citizen Science Program. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. Melissa, Dan, and Terry are going to be all together in Charlotte tonight at, I think, let me see here.
CPCs.
CPCC at 7 o'clock for the Clean Air Carolinas program on making air visible. We have more information about that on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talk. So several months ago, Terry, we met with an artist, I think, through your organization, working with air keepers in an effort to make pollution visible. She had designed this project called Particle Falls. They projected it on the side of the downtown campus building here at UNC, and when sensors picked up particulate matter in the air, this waterfall image became very different in what it looked like on the side of that building. What did that work end up demonstrating to people?
Well, it was an incredible mix of art and science. So we had this opportunity to display 10 stories high a consistent image, a blue waterfall. We struggled to make air visible. What Particle Falls did in a larger scale was to take this technology, a technology called a nephelometer that measures particulate matter in the air, and she uses her math and science skills along with her artistic vision to change those impulses and digital data into this light projection. So when a car passed by that was emitting higher levels of particulate matter, or when the wind blew in particulate matter pollution from other areas, this blue waterfall of light changed into a fireball of light based upon the readings of particulate matter that the nephelometer was picking up. So we had an opportunity to have this large-scale fixed piece of citizen science in the most basic terms. We had a scientific instrument calibrated and it was visualizing that data in real time for people to see. What we have done from this large-scale piece is shrunk it down into a handheld product. The technology 5 years ago, 10 years ago, did not allow us to do this. Particle Falls used this hacker-maker technology. We employed a company called Airbeam that has created a handheld monitoring device based upon the scientific foundation of the nephelometer. And it becomes portable. It becomes real-time particulate matter pollution readings in your hand.
And at ACLIMA, you are also trying to make air quality visible in a different way. You're not projecting it on the sides of buildings, but you're doing it in a different way with a slightly different technology. Was this the brainchild of your company, or is this just the natural progression of things and you saw the technology as a way to do something in your line of work?
Well, ACLIMA was founded a number of years ago on this premise of, like, we know we can kind of – we need to measure what we call measure the treasure, make it visible what we're doing, both air, water, as you're saying. And at the same time, the technology for miniaturization of air quality measurements has been like really exciting and something that's been gathering more and more momentum over the last, I'd say, decade, especially in the last few years. So what's made what ACLIMA wants to do possible is a combination of this miniaturization of the small-scale sensors allowing for a measurement that – right now we get through a regulatory, you know, network, again, in someone's hand or locally or, you know, on a city scale, along with things like the cloud. When you put out several tens to hundreds to thousands of those individual measurements, and they're all streaming in with 1 second or 1 minute data, it's a lot of data.
Right.
So now we have cloud computing. We've got the small measurements. We've got amazing new visualization tools that allow us to understand and show what's happening there, as well as the deep machine learning that can allow you to explore and see patterns that you couldn't if you're just looking at a time, you know, series of an individual pollutant. You start getting a time series of a number of pollutants all over the place, multiple pollutants together, which can give you a fingerprint for something, and really start to get at an understanding that we haven't been able to achieve it.
So this could only be done if the technology had been reduced in size to allow you to do it the way you're doing. And it could only be understood, the information that you're gathering, with these cloud computers all coming together to analyze the data in fairly something close to real time. Dan Costa is with us from the Environmental Protection Agency. And you're in a partnership at the EPA with ACLIMA and also with Google Earth. How did this come together, and how does it work, Dan?
Well, the partnership actually started with a relationship between one of our senior investigators who actually develops and tests varying sensors for particles, for certain gases. And the relationship between this senior investigator and ACLIMA started as a small cooperative research and development agreement. And from there, the potential for doing something more was offered up, and this investigator, Dr. Paul Solomon, came to me, talked to me about the opportunity that ACLIMA was presenting from the standpoint of their technology and their approach and their broad thinking and how they wanted to apply some of these methods. And, you know, the whole issue of sensors is one that's sort of exploding right now technologically. As Melissa said, the miniaturization of sensors and they're what you can go to Amazon right now and buy any number of these things. One of the issues that came out of this was, EPA monitors the air quality. If there's anything that we take for granted in this life, it's the air that we breathe, right? And the fact that things can be in the air that affect your health is something that, particularly today, we probably don't appreciate quite as much as we did years ago when you could actually see the air. It's sort of an interesting, the air was visible back then.
Before we cleaned it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we even take it more for granted, but nevertheless, there are still things in the air, plenty of things in the air that can affect your health. So this monitoring network that we have is a very expensive network. It depending on the pollutant that it's measuring, the samples are taken on an hourly or a daily basis. Sometimes they're averaged over longer periods of time, and those monitors, there are about 1,500 or so scattered around the country. They're concentrated in urban areas where there are people. I think Charlotte has about six or so. These national networks, and these are the gold standards. Very, very expensive. They require monitoring from the standpoint of people going to them and taking quality assurance measurements. And there are regulations associated with several of these pollutants. And if areas are out of compliance, you know, they have to meet these things with, restrictions and various kind of regulations on local emitters, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the whole automobile technology has changed because of this. Well, suddenly we have all these sensors, and if you can buy one, are they any good? If you measure something on that sensor, does it really relate to the gold standard monitoring? Well, many of them don't. Most of them don't, because the technology is new. There's not a clear program for quality assurance on these monitors. And as you might suspect, all of the folks at the local level who have to do this monitoring, who have to meet these national standards and run the risk of, affecting road funding from the federal government, there are lots of implications. So there was lots of scary thoughts going around among these people. What are we going to do with all this information? If it's not right, people are going to call us up. So EPA has been working within itself to try to move in a way to help entrepreneurs develop these technologies and make them better. It gives us a finer screen assessment of what might be in an area, but we don't know if these are any good. So as this is evolving, ACLIMA clearly is one of the leaders in this area. It just seemed to be an opportunity for us to work with them to see how we might best try to get in front of this issue, help the entrepreneurs, have them understand where it is that we're coming from, where the states are coming from, and really develop a coalition, because this is happening whether EPA wants to be part of it or not.
So let me see if I understand this, Dan, and we only have about a minute left in this segment.
But sure.
What you're saying is that we have very expensive sensors that are already placed around the country in various cities by the EPA. Mm-hmm. They're monitored by scientists. They've been calibrated properly. We know the information coming out of those big sensors is accurate. As we move into this hyper-local atmosphere where the sensors are smaller, they're being utilized by companies like ACLIMA, like Clean Air Keepers here, we have to make sure that those sensors are as accurate as the big sensors, so that the data that we're getting and analyzing and using to make decisions is as valid from these small sensors as it is from the big ones. And that's part of what this study with Google Earth, ACLIMA, the EPA, and even the EPA and Air Keepers here in Charlotte is all about, in a nutshell, correct? Right?
Right. And that is the goal. We're not there yet, but that is indeed the goal.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about how it's going to work here in Charlotte, how it's working in other places in the country with Google Earth and their little magic cars that go around and photograph houses and also now take air sensor quality measurements. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Concerts, presenting Emerson String Quartet, a string ensemble with a career spanning four decades with performances around the world, performing at CPCC's Halton Theater Thursday at 7:30. Tickets at charlotteconcerts.org. And The Secret Chocolatier, a family-owned chocolate shop specializing in handmade confections, corporate gift baskets, and a Chocolate of the Month Club. Ordering online and shipping available at The Secret Chocolatier.com. Well, as the frenzy around Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and the upcoming holiday shopping season got you scratching your head and thinking, Isn't this all just a little too much? Well, if that's the case, you're not alone. Perhaps you're an unknowing member of the minimalist movement. As the name suggests, their focus is on removing clutter and embracing only the things that add value to our lives. And we'll talk to some minimalists about how life could be better if we owned fewer things tomorrow at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, several cities, including Boston and Chicago, have vowed not to participate in deportation policies championed by President-elect Trump. And lawmakers in California are moving to limit cooperation with federal immigration agents. A look at so-called sanctuary cities under a Trump presidency.
The Ian Rehm Show from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about air quality and new hyper-local air quality sensors that are being deployed around the country. One project by Aclima. It's a company out of the Bay Area in San Francisco. Dr. Melissa London is with us. She's the chief scientist for Aclima. Dan Costa is also with us. He's the national program director for air climate and energy research program at the EPA. They are involved with Aclima and with Google Earth on the project going on in the West Coast, and they're also involved with Terry Lanza. Denzel's organization. That is Clean Air Carolinas. He's also the manager of Air Keepers, and they have a citizen science program also that involves sensors for air quality that the EPA is working with them on. As we just talked about, this is relatively new technology. It's suddenly become less expensive. It's become portable. It's enabled Aclima and local folks here to start monitoring air quality on a local level. Question is, are these readings accurate? And that's what the study that you are involved in with the EPA is involved in, testing the readings against what, bigger readings from the stationary sensors?
Yeah, we sort of consider that the gold standard, if you will.
But the big sensors are sensing overall air quality in San Francisco or Charlotte or Atlanta or big portions of San Francisco or Charlotte or Atlanta. You're driving Google Earth cars at Aclima as they're taking photographs of the street. They have sensors mounted on the cars, and they're bringing back readings of the air quality where they are. At the street level, and they're constantly moving. You're doing something, we'll talk about your project, but you're doing something similar here. Aren't air quality readings going to be fundamentally different if we're driving downtown in Charlotte, or you're driving through a suburban neighborhood, or you're out in a park someplace?
Yes, they are, and that's part of the excitement about hyperlocal air quality. I should say that we at Aclima have a really rigorous scientific program to look at what's affecting the data quality of the sensors and making them as good as we can. So, for instance, in the cars, we have times where we will what we call co-locate with a federal site that is measuring air quality for, you know, like one of the EPA monitoring stations. In addition, we've fitted up our cars with sort of equivalent technology. So at the same time, they're measuring with their gold standard, we're measuring with a similar gold standard, and we have the sensors. So that is a way that we are developing developing and testing out, I should say, the sensors so that we can understand what affects them, how we get the best data quality out of them, so that we can actually trust that reading we're taking on that street in downtown Charlotte.
How long has it been going on?
We started with the Google Street View project in summer of 2014. In Denver, where we fitted up three cars and drove for about a month or so around in the Denver area during the summer of 2014.
And when you compared the readings you were getting from the three cars you had deployed around Denver with the readings from the big sensors that tell Denverites, if that's the right word, what their air quality is like, was it similar? Was it different? How do you know? Because if you're sitting in if your Google car is behind a bus that's spewing diesel fumes, the readings are going to be considerably higher than if it was out in the suburban area, and maybe even higher than it would be from the big sensors overall. How do you know how to compare it?
Well, so we did this collocations in different ways of making sure that the cars were reading a value that we were comfortable with. Or, I mean, not comfortable with, that was high quality. And then what we do is sort of drive around that central area. We knew the measurement. We can count on the measurement because it's coming from from the local air quality measurement district. And so we can sort of look at, from that larger area we drove, what are the measurements? How does our sort of combined data from that larger driving pattern, which includes highways, residential streets, major thoroughfares, with that central measurement? And they compare pretty well. But what the cars get, so those two values, like a summary of all of our driving and the measurement at the center of that, compared pretty well. And then what we get around that is areas that are, as you say, higher and lower.
So the EPA is involved in the study, and they're trying to keep these, they're trying to improve the integrity of these sensors. So as ACLIMA and you work together, is the EPA, Dan, setting the standards, the measurement standards, or are you working as a team? Are they helping you set the measurement standards?
Well, that's an excellent question because, you know, right now we have a group that crosses a number of the offices that have interest in air issues as well as water issues within the agency, where we're trying to come up with a way to develop a system where we can, in fact, offer vendors or primarily developers an opportunity to have their devices tested. We don't have the resources and the manpower internally to do this like AUL does for, safety of electrical appliances and that sort of thing. So we're trying to come up with a way to incentivize a third-party group or series of folks that Southern California, for example, the South Coast Air Basin, from funds that California had left over from their tobacco taxes, have actually started a small one. We had a pilot one here for a limited number of sensors to try to actually test them against varying kinds of, strict protocols to see if, in fact, they're accurate. But right now there isn't, so it's kind of like the wild, wild west. There are people trying to do good work. ACLIMA is one of them trying to do this kind of thing. But there are others where they just put something together, put a fancy cover on it, and sell it. And you have no idea whether you're measuring something that's
so,
right.
So at some point, as you work with ACLIMA and work closely with these other organizations, such as our own in Charlotte, Clean Air Carolinas, will then, I take it, develop a set of standards not only for those taking measurements in their own localities, but for these devices that they are using. Is that the end goal here?
We're trying to develop a system where that can be some sort of set of standards can be implemented. I won't say that EPA will develop standards because that has a whole lot of implications legally and that sort of thing. But we're trying to say, if you're selling something, you'd like it to be measuring something that you can believe.
So here in Charlotte, Terry Lanzel, and we'll talk about this project. Clean Air Carolina has been working on clean air for years now. Here, you have an air keepers program, which I think is a new term to a lot of people, a citizen science program. Is that the program that will be dealing with these portable sensors in Charlotte, the Citizen Science Program?
It is. So I want to backtrack just a little bit. Our Citizen Science Program utilizing this particular product is important to us because this particular product allows us to do what ACLIMA is doing for their Google cars, for their vehicles that they're driving around. We can take this and we can put it on a bike. We're not going to put it on a car. The airflow there is going to be a little challenging for us. But we can put this mobile and mobilize these devices around the community. The thing that we're excited about also is that this product now allows us to have fixed locations that imitate the federal sites that are the gold standard for this particular kind of pollutant called particulate matter, this criteria pollutant. It's an interesting mix that allows us to measure the randomness of the air in our community as well as the air that passes by specific sites. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned earlier that we have around eight sites, eight series of monitors in Mecklenburg County, but they're set up really in this prevailing wind flow from southwest to northeast for the most part. What this citizen science program, this AirKeeper program, allows us to do is to create a web around Mecklenburg County so that we can start seeing how air moves throughout our county and possibly understand where it's coming from better.
So how many of these small – I'm holding one in my hand. It's about the size of this of the palm of your hand, and it weighs practically nothing. How many of these will be deployed when you're fully up and operational?
Well, we're fully up and operational
okay,
right
many,
now.
How many?
But we've got 19, so an inventory of 19 right now.
How often – and these are being attached to bicycles and things like that. So are they out X number of hours a day? Are they all out at the same time? How do you do it?
That's the beauty of the AirKeeper program right now for Mecklenburg County and for the city of Charlotte and for Clean Air Carolina. We have opportunities to have mobile sessions. We can bring together a sustainability group from – a corporation, and we can do a mobile session. We've managed up to eight monitors at the same time for about a 30-minute period. They disperse around our community. They come back. We download that data in real time, and people can see what they were exposed to. So that bus that passed by,
They
can identify that spike that may occur on the monitor and say, we were in front of that bus. We actually took a picture of that bus. We have a direct correlation now from direct exposure. That is hyperlocal air quality monitoring.
But as you say,
at its core,
things are different in different areas of the city. And if you're stopped dead in the middle of the day at Trade and Tryon, where automobile traffic is going in all four directions, you're going to probably have a little worse air quality than you would if you're sitting out at Freedom Park, parked on Princeton Road or something. And you also have the fact that air moves. So what are you really learning here? What's different about this? Because it may be bad right now at Trade and Tryon, but in 10 minutes, not so bad, not so much. So what are you really learning about this at this hyper-local level? I don't know who to – you're the scientist here, doctor. Go ahead. Take a stab.
One of the sort of key things that you're trying to get at when you are measuring air quality is what do we call sources. What are the sources and then the receptors? Where is that pollutant going to? And so there are –
unless you follow the particulate matter as it blows through the atmosphere, how do you know where it's going?
So what we have are, you know, the number of measurements, say like 9 or 90, you know, kind of what we really want to expand to, a number of measurements, and then we can pair that with air quality models that do exist that the EPA and others – use to predict what's happening, understand what's happening. And so by merging these data sources together, you can understand, okay, that happened at this region. Here is where it likely went. And then we can say, yep, we did measure at that point here. And so we can understand where the pollutants evolve and where they're going.
Sure. For
Mike,
us.
Mike, this is, just,
go ahead, Dan.
This is Dan. I'd like to just throw in a couple things. You know, well, actually, there are two things. One is you know, we're going right now, as you mentioned, these central monitors actually measure fairly large locales, and through statistical models, we can actually estimate what people's exposures are. They're not really, really perfect, but they're actually pretty good, and that's been the basis for relating air exposures to health outcomes that we actually use to develop the air monitoring standards that we currently have. Now, the issue has always been sort of the spatial variation, you know, especially in certain communities that happen to have, like with the AirKeepers program, they're looking at communities that may be around areas with lots of traffic, for example, intersecting. You can have hot spots scattered around so people are exposed to different levels, and that particularly affects, you know, certain communities, like environmental justice communities oftentimes where companies, because land is cheaper, that's where they go, and things aren't as clean as they probably should be. So it has really great utility from the standpoint of implementing the standards and trying to make sure that people are breathing as clean air as they possibly can.
I know this is all new, and it's still in the study phase, both in California and as part of this AirKeepers program here in Charlotte, but how are we supposed to use this information? I said in the beginning that ultimately what you'd like to see is this information to be as ubiquitous to the average person as the weather forecast. And God knows we are inundated, thanks to television and smartphones, with what's happening right now in the weather. It's raining. Oh, my goodness. Let's do 20 minutes on the rain. What are we supposed to do with this? When it's part of either Google Maps, because that is what's happening with the Google project, air quality hotspots are showing up on Google Maps, or will eventually. If forecasters can now put this information into the weather forecast and tie it down to your neighborhood, what are we supposed to do with it?
I think you've keyed into one of the really important issues, and that is interpreting this information. You know, our understanding of the health effects of air pollution are based on studies which have formed the basis of the current standards, which are usually at the very smallest. They're for ozone, for example, maybe at a couple-hour exposure basis. Some of them are 24-hour standards. Some of them are longer. You're holding something in your hand that gives you a measurement of what you were just exposed to in the last minute. How do you put that in the context of what we understand? And mm-hmm. That's the real complexity, is the interpretation of this. And I think it's only going to be with the collection of lots of data and trying to apply sophisticated statistical models to spread out our knowledge of the health effects at the same time as we're looking at the exposure, will we be able to get a sense of this?
As this technology becomes smaller and more ubiquitous and inexpensive, right now I can look at my internal thermostat at my house and know what the inside temperature and humidity is and what the outside temperature and humidity is. And if I wanted to, I suppose I could look up the barometric pressure and whether it's rising or falling. Are you seeing a day when people will have these sensors on their back patios or their decks to know, well, I can go out there now because ozone is low or there's no diesel fume in the air? Do you see that coming?
It's today.
It's happening now.
Yeah, that's right. So, for example, I'll pull out an example. We're really focused in the northwest quarter of our community. So we have three sensors there, fixed sensors. We've got over a year's worth of data collected, 1 second intervals. Over the past 4 months, been an amazing commitment by the leaders in those communities in the Northwest Corridor. What they do see and what we can see is that we were seeing the effects of the fires, the wildfires in North Carolina, on our monitors long before it made the news, long before we had the alerts. We were seeing that drifting smoke engage our monitors, and we were seeing this impact directly. So yes, this Citizen Science Airkeeper program for Clean Air Carolina has the ability to allow you on your tablet or your smartphone to look at the air quality outside your door right now to know whether you're going to be able to take a run and breathe clean, healthy air, or whether you need to time your exercise or outdoor activity later on.
So this will find its way to Fitbits.
Well, that was a great opportunity that I tried in our grant process, was trying to explain this process, that this is a Fitbit for air quality. Mm-hmm. This lets you know in real time what the air is around you. That's the true hyperlocal. There might be even an opportunity, if the wind direction is right, to identify individual cars or buses that go through neighborhoods that may be in need of maintenance. It also shows industry's impact. And closer proximity to industry sources can identify particular emissions.
Now, you have in front of you a tablet. I want to talk about this when we come back, because it's a tablet of downtown, and you're displaying a map of downtown, and on that tablet, a number keeps changing. I assume that's related to air quality. We'll come back in a moment and talk about that and more. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and historic Brattonsville Christmas candlelight tours. Christmas in colonial and antebellum Carolina backcountry, costume performances, and family-friendly activities December 10th, 3 to 9 p.m., chmuseums.org. And UNC Charlotte's Engineering Senior Design Expo, Friday, December 9th, 11 to 2, in the Student Activity Center, featuring students' industrial solutions for national and international companies. Details at ISL. cal.uncc.edu. Several cities, including Boston and Chicago, have vowed not to participate in deportation policies championed by President-elect Trump. And lawmakers in California are moving to limit cooperation with federal immigration agents. So, in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, Diane and a panel of guests talk about so-called sanctuary cities under a Trump presidency. That's coming up. We're going to continue our conversation about air quality monitoring. Stay with us.
Economic anxiety is real out there, job anxiety in particular.
We have a new technology. In this case, it'll be automation, software automation, that will replace a giant percentage of current jobs.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. There are some tech companies, though, that think they have a solution for the anxiety they helped create. We'll tell you about it next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
In Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE, I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about hyper-local air pollution monitoring, something that's just emerging as a technology, and it's being experimented with and studied by the EPA. Dan Costa is with us. He's the National Program Director of Air, Climate, and Energy Research at the Environmental Protection Agency. He joins us by phone. He's working on a project along with a private company called Aclima, and they are represented in our studio by Dr. Melissa London, who's their chief scientist. Google Earth is also involved in this project on the West Coast. And here in Charlotte, Terry Lanzel is Program Director of Clean Air Carolinas and Manager of Air Keepers. That's a citizen science program, and they have deployed these small air quality sensors, and they are working with the EPA as well. And all three of these individuals will be speaking tonight at 7 at CPCC for Clean Air Carolinas in a program called Making Air Visible. We have information about that on our website at wfae.org/charlottetalks. So, Terry, you have in front of you this tablet. And on the tablet is a map of downtown Charlotte and a number that keeps changing, 61, 69, 62, 71, 63, 66. That's how fast it's changing. So what am I looking at? What is this?
Well, on this particular screen, the monitor is called an AirBeam. It has a multiple deck of sensors. It has a sound sensor. That's actually what you're hearing now or seeing now is a sound.
If I just be quiet, the number would stop changing?
That's right. That's right. okay. But it also has a relative humidity, and it also has temperature. And it also has a particulate matter reading. And they're categorized based upon the levels that are being recorded. So green is good, yellow is not so good, orange is unhealthy, red is unhealthy for everyone. This is the template, and you can be interfaced through any device at aircasting.org. We've got some information on our website at cleanaircarolina.org as well.
Well, I went to aircasting.org yesterday, and I couldn't figure out how to use it.
It is a challenge. That's part of our AirKeeper program is to be the interface. We had an incredible grant given to us by Z. Smith Reynolds to work in the Northwest Corridor with some specific environmental justice issues that we're dealing with in Mecklenburg County. But this grant has allowed us to develop a toolkit that even the developer of the AirBeam has not really created an instruction manual based upon the device you choose. We've also been able to develop a lesson plan for children in middle school and elementary school to help understand how to visualize air quality. We've also have a lesson plan for high schools and at the collegiate level as well. And we're working with partners in the Northwest Corridor as well as UNCC now in a women's in STEM program that they're actually doing the monitoring for us now at UNCC and reporting out on this. This device, through the AirCasting interface, while it is a little bit cumbersome, it gets you the real readings for these particular mobile sessions or fixed sessions. And Clean Air Carolina is really working hard to deploy more fixed sessions in Mecklenburg County and across the state so we can complement the network of monitors the EPA already has.
I want to follow up on a couple of different terms, one of which you just said, environmental justice. And that's been mentioned earlier in the program. I'm not sure everybody understands what that means and how it relates to air quality. What does that mean, environmental justice? That there are certain, like there are food deserts in the world, there are places where air quality is simply too high and it's there because we've dumped all the all of the detritus of all the bad things in society into that area, and people live around it and have to deal with it because they can't afford to live anywhere else? Is that what we're talking about here?
Basically, yes. Environmental justice areas are areas where they're often, like Dan was saying, the land is cheap, and so that's where housing might be, right. But it's also located near industries, other areas,
so let's bring community it, is. So let's bring it home. Where in Charlotte do we have examples of environmental injustice because of that?
Well, let's take a look at the Northwest Corridor. We have a huge amount of permitted facilities allowed to pollute the air based upon federal and state standards. That is an industrial level. The zoning mm-hmm. in the Northwest Corridor, for the large part, is an industrial zoning.
Northwest Corridor, for people who live in Ballantyne, is what?
Well, it's to say between 16 and 77, that kind of okay. Northwest Corridor. Bates Ford Road kind of is the heart of that.
West Charlotte.
West Charlotte, that's right. Of course, in West Charlotte, if you're a Charlottean, you know that there are a couple of interstates. Mm-hmm. Around there, 77, 85, 277, Highway 16,
yeah.
277, they're all right there. And the highest concentration of mobile source pollution hits that area the hardest. And that is an environmental justice area we were concerned with because they're the ones who can't afford to get out.
So we already know that from our major sensors, and just from intellectually we know that because we know that mobile source pollution comes from interstate highways, and they're enveloped in that. So what do we? And now we have these smaller sensors that will probably take that down to a block by block indication. What then do we do about it?
Well, we can understand trends. Oh, sorry. Go ahead,
Dan.
I was just going to say that there are a number of things. First of all, as Terry was about to say, we can certainly understand trends, but there are also, there's a certain kind of 1960s mentality that's growing right now, where people are beginning to feel empowered. People want to know what is around them, and this gives people the power, potentially political power, to make changes. And it also, there have been efforts to in communities, for example, to put in new vegetation, trees, shrubbery, etc., between roads and where houses exist where that's possible. Hmm. Sometimes to put air cleaners in houses or keep windows closed and use air conditioning systems, which does reduce certain amounts of particles in the air. So it's an opportunity for people to really take charge and make decisions for themselves now where they can, whether they're going to live in that community or not. But it may affect road traffic planning, density, community decisions. So it's really a change in the way we do, or the way communities do business.
Charlotte is certainly becoming denser. That's a recent phenomenon, but it's one that shows no indication of any impending abatement. It's just going to keep going. And this is happening around the world. People are moving, and this has happened over time as well, but people are moving into cities. Away from the rural areas, more compact, more densification is going on around the world. That's where this becomes very important, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think that, as Dan was saying, there's more empowerment on the local level, and cities in many ways are really leading the charge in sustainability and environmental sort of ways of designing cities so that they can be cleaner, more efficient, more sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so the kinds of data that we can get, this hyperlocal data, can also be used by communities to help design as we do densification, design.
Planners can come in and take this information that you've already collected. What would they do with it? How would they design differently if they have the information that you're going to provide them? What might be different?
You can, right away with the infrastructure we have, work on ways of designing different, say, for traffic pollutants, commute corridors, light timing, some simple things like that. And the nice thing about having a dense network is that you can make that change and then you can see the results of that change almost right away.
Wow.
So if you want to try like a bus rapid transit route and changing all the buses to methane or something, you're going to see that change in the data with the sort of hyperlocal information. Changing the way that when cars can come into the downtown region, some cities experiment with that. As Dan was saying, ways to put green spaces in and ways to put foot corridors versus traffic corridors to lower overall exposure if you are moving throughout the city. So there's a lot of really exciting ways, and I'm sure a number we can't even dream of right now, where you can use the data to design better design.
So we have about 8 minutes left, and I really want to talk a little bit about the citizen science component of this, which is what's happening here in Charlotte with airkeepers, and it's something that the EPA is also encouraging, but there are some challenges to that, which I want to talk about. The EPA wants to provide citizen science opportunities in the area of scientific research, and this Clean Air Carolina's cooperative effort is an example of that. Is that right, Terry?
That's right. That's right. So we.
Why is that important? Why is it important that citizens become scientists?
Well, you know, for us, the power of science has to lead us, and I think the more people understand that. That science and information has the power to make change, the better off we're all going to be. To say that our air is clean just because you can't smell it or see anything in the air is not the reality that we're faced in Charlotte in any way, shape, or form. While our air has improved through efforts, bipartisan efforts over a decade ago called the Clean Smokestacks Act to clean up the energy generation sector from fuel standards, these are all relative changes that have happened and that made the livability in North Carolina so fantastic over the past decade. And we need to continue the monitoring effort at the hyper-local level to ensure that that progress continues.
But why ordinary people? Why aren't there people like you and Dr. London and Dan Costa from the EPA and other people who work for the government or work for NGOs that are interested in science? Why ordinary people?
So maybe you know someone with asthma.
I don't, but that's okay.
Okay, well, yeah. Most of us do, hopefully out there, that is not a serious situation for every family. But when you have a health condition that is respiratory in nature, these devices become your scientific tool to protect your public health. So you can use the devices to understand where your highest level of exposure is. If you're taking the bus to school and you're waiting in line in the carpool line, and you see the measurements go sky high because of all the idling cars, and then a couple of hours later you have an asthma attack, you can then correlate that kind of activity. Now, is it a direct correlation? But you can understand how your behavior impacts your health, and you can start to change your behavior with the understanding that this scientific data collection can help you live your life better and improve your livability.
And Dan Costa, the EPA has air sensor toolboxes for citizen scientists. What are they? What do they do? How do interested people get them? How do you use them?
Well, if you go to Google and type in air sensor toolbox, the first thing that will come up will be this air sensor toolbox for citizen scientists, researchers and developers at our website. And it's a toolbox where we've had three citizen science workshops here, and we've developed a series of presentations, a series of tools, things that citizens need to know. It's sort of like if you're going to do a science project with your kid in school and you don't know the first thing how to do this, how do you actually construct this? How do you get people to work together? How do you actually plan a project that might give you information that's useful to you and your community? So there are a number of links, reports, video, sort of how-to instructions that are all in that air sensor toolbox, which is quite compatible with the tool system that Terry was talking about. And we've really tried to make it educational and useful to people who want to explore. And so many communities are coming out using these various techniques.
So the challenge here, and I think you mentioned it, Dan, earlier in the program, is that unless these devices that you're supplying in these toolboxes come from you or a company like Acclima, as these standards become more widely understood and set in stone, the problem is that people may buy a device that is not calibrated properly or simply not accurate, period. And that the... And what's being reported back is not necessarily true or trustworthy. So how do you ensure that what people are getting and what they're reporting either to you or to themselves is in fact true?
Yeah, well, that's certainly a big issue. A colleague of mine in Southern California, when they first started, the sensors began spreading, you know, rapidly around the community. This fellow was getting 1,000 phone calls a month. His office from people saying, I have this monitor that says the air pollution on my street is this. What are you doing about it? And they were using devices that really had no, they were not very good, not to mention the fact the translation of what that number means to you as a person is just not there. And that's one of the things that we have in our toolbox, trying to translate these things. And ultimately, it's an evolutionary process. And all, the technology, in fact, is advancing more rapidly than our interpretive ability. And that's one of the real challenges, particularly for us in the agency.
This is the big data problem that we've talked about on this program.
Part of it, the big data problem, and part of it, what does a number mean?
Yeah.
You know, numbers look like they should mean something. I mean, we use them in the polls, for example, in the last election. What do these numbers mean? They can be, if they're not right, they're useless.
Okay. Terry, you're collecting data right now. Your phalanx of citizen scientists are helping to do that. What do you do with that information? Do you feed it to the EPA? Do you feed it to local pollution control authorities? What do you do with it?
Well, right now, the first place it goes into the World Wide Web. Mm-hmm. So it's the Internet of Things. This is a connected device. So it is streaming live data right now. We're working with partners in Mecklenburg County, Mecklenburg County's Air Quality Commission, to share that data and share the technology as well. In fact, we have a site that we've donated to Air Quality to use, and they're streaming live data now at Geringer High School. And we're looking at that information in real time with the federal monitors to sort of see what the regression model might be. Are we 99% accurate? Are we 80% accurate? Are we seeing the same trend lines occur at the same location? And this is the same kind of co-location study that we're really excited about working with the EPA on to say, is this a good monitor?
And the hope is that this kind of local, hyper-local measurement will be able to influence public policy or the people who control things at some level at some point in the near future. I know that ACLIMA is also working with Google on mapping the indoor environment. And sometimes our indoor environments are far less healthy than the outdoor environment. You've got 21 Google offices around the world participating in this, collecting 500 million data points every day. I wish we had time to talk about it, but we don't. But we'll look forward maybe to a future discussion about that. Meanwhile, Dan, EPA, do you expect any changes in this program when the Trump administration takes over in three words or less?
Maybe.
Okay. And with that, we'll leave it there. Dan Costa with the EPA, Terry Lancel with Carolina Clean Air Carolinas, and Dr. Melissa London with